Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Brought to you by Chevy Drive Chicago. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. Tonight, we skate with them.
Boldy looking to push through. Back Boldy to the net. He scores!
Tonight, we stay with them.
Now McDavid, Theodore with it. Celebrating fires, the save by Hellebuck. Quick whistle.
And we shut them down because we can.
Carter touched the net. Oh, Taves had a wide open goal.
Arner looks for Taves on the backside. That puck's going in. He got the paddle, Bush.
Wow.
You were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Now Jack Hughes puts it around the park. United States with numbers. Watch the clutch, it comes. Jack Hughes wins it. The golden goal for the United States. For the first time since the 1980 miracle, the United States takes the goal. Jack Hughes beating Jordan Bennington.
Still getting goosebumps a few days after. 46 years after the miracle on ice, the U.S. men win gold over Canada with a miraculous effort from one Connor Hellebuck. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We're brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy Dealers, Chevy Drive Chicago. With Barstool Chief, I am Pat Boyle. We are coming to you from the Jeff Dickerson Studios in the Chicago Board of Trade. How about the new digs,
Chief? This place is a palace. It's gorgeous. So they did a great job. So shout out to Zetterman and everybody who was involved in this move, because it looks spectacular.
We got Aiden spinning the dials and getting us into the building, swipe cards and everything. Yep. We made it.
Shout out Brendan Riley. I might be the most difficult employee to work with here at this company when it comes to tech stuff. So he held my hand through all of that.
Have you met Tom Waddle?
Yeah, true.
Tech is not
good call.
In that man's DNA.
I'm also like 20, 25 years younger than him, so I should be better, but I'm not. So I'm just, I was born old.
So the Blackhawks kick off their final 25 games of the regular season tomorrow in Nashville. We'll get into the storylines that has our attention over the next 7 weeks. You also talked to Kyle Davidson, the general manager. We'll get into that as well. But we're still euphoric over the men's 2-1 victory in overtime over Canada. Give me your biggest takeaways a few days after you've been able to decompress.
Well, it's right away that morning. You know, we haven't had a big hockey game in Chicago in a long time. And that feeling where it's every moment, every shot could change the whole game and you're just on pins and needles. You feel like you're going to puke for 3 hours straight. And then to get the win, you're elated. And look, I love USA hockey. I was 10 years old when they won the World Cup in 1996 with Chelios and Leach and Madonna and all those guys that were like the superstar Americans of my youth, Mike Richter. And, you know, it's like we've been knocking on the door. It's like, you know, silver medal in 2002 and the Crosby Golden Goal in 10. And it's just like last year, Four Nations, I was in Boston for that. And it was like, you know, they just gut you every time. And to finally slay the dragon. And the other thing about it is I'm so glad it was Canada. Canada was pushed, you know, by many teams, Czechs, Finland on the way. And it's like in real time, I was like, wouldn't be the worst thing if they lost, you know, like have an easier path. But beating Canada, there aren't really many genuine rivalries in international sports. And that is one. USA Hockey and you know, Hockey Canada, That is such a rivalry, and it's all the best players in the world on one sheet of ice. It lived up to the hype. Connor Hellebuck, I'll never say a bad word about him again, because, you know, historically, the playoffs, kind of a bugaboo in for him in pressure situations. He got the Presidential Medal of Freedom at the State of the Union. Well earned. I don't know who else they've given that to. I'm all for giving it to
15
Connor.
15 others, I think the president said. Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever.
I can't
give
name
it,
them.
But. Give it to him. Build him a statue. Put him on Mount Rushmore. He was spectacular. And it was just like this generation who had had World Junior success, and then, you know, you're getting close at these other tournaments, and it was awesome. You know, I was with our old friend Scott Darling for the game. Real tears coming out of his face. So, and like the, you know, I was at the barn, the bar, and the place.
That place was going crazy.
It was rocking. And it just, there's something about being in an environment where everybody's locked in, everybody's rooting for the same team. And it's America. It was great.
So, and gold medal games like that, and slaying the dragon, so to speak, and finally knocking off your rival, Canada, it's supposed to unite everybody. And I guess over the last few days, I have been surprised with some of the reaction, especially from the Canadian side of things. Because last year after the Four Nations, I think you and I did a show where it was like, that was good for hockey.
Yeah.
We would like to have won.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Austin Matthews had the puck on a stick a couple times to end it.
Brady did too.
And it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But we weren't bashing anybody. There was always a but to it. Congratulations to the Americans, but.
Yeah.
I can't believe the way they're celebrating. But act like you've been there before.
We haven't
been there before.
Since 1980. And that was a great clip to come in with the Herb Brooks beats from Miracle, spliced in with the goals. It gave me the chills all over again. And look, I understand it if you're Canada being really mad. That's all you got. This is like our fourth most popular sport. It's my favorite sport, but I know where it stands in the pecking order. And so if it's like, man, like the Americans got us again, tensions are high. I feel like everything is so political. And so I think maybe there's an element of that, at least with the online chatter. I saw a lot of that in my mentions. So it is just one of those things. But the game was great. The players were great. And look, we were the underdog. Like, if you look at the rosters, and I know Crosby got hurt, and so what, you know, that's unfortunate because I would want to beat them at their peak. But they got McDavid, McKinnon, Celebrity's unbelievable, Makar. Like, you can make an argument that they had the four best players in the tournament on their team.
For sure.
And
they had three of them
on one line.
Yeah.
I mean. And then you go back, and when the team was named, and Billy Guerin, it's like, getting all this criticism. How do you leave Jason Robertson off? How do you leave Lane Hutson off? How do you leave these different guys? And it was like Billy Guerin built a team to beat Canada, and mission accomplished. It was defensive. It was the Jack Hughes quote immediately after. It was gritty. It was ballsy. It was
penalty all kill 18 for 18.
Spectacular.
You don't not win.
Right.
Gold.
That's why Vincent Trocheck's on this team. That's why JT Miller's
Miller
is on this team.
I'll eat crow on that. Yeah. I questioned it at the time, and I certainly don't now. I mean, those guys, they knew their role. There wasn't going to be a ton of ice time.
They're looking for the right players, not the best players.
There you go.
So.
You talked about the political spin, and I guess, you know, we always need to be prepared for that to happen. People jumping on the players' reaction to, you know, the president's inappropriate joke.
A lot of people in my company.
Yeah, like I don't, what are you supposed to do in that situation? It wasn't like they were guffawing on the floor, heard guys in the background go two for two.
Right.
Giving recognition to the women's team and their gold medal. And then people get upset that they go to the White House. Tell me a championship team that doesn't go to the White House.
Yeah, and it's also like, all those guys were at the gold medal game for the women's team, cheering them on. Jack Hughes' mom is a development coach. She played for the U.S. women's team in 1992. Like, they all support each other. I was lucky enough to play in like a pond hockey tournament. I think it was 2021. It was sometime during COVID. It was an outdoor pond hockey tournament. Megan Keller was on my team. So she got, you
That's
know,
awesome.
Another championship. She won one with me, and now she's got a gold medal. And it's just
I did,
you know,
see that tweet.
Yeah. So
it's always about you.
Yeah. So it was, but like there, and a lot of those girls, like you know, Amanda Kessel was there. A lot of these people, and I'm sure you've met Kendall Coyne. God,
Kendall, I've known for many years now.
Right, and a Berkshire girl, same school as me, and so she's, you know, like you want, like I feel like everybody that's a hockey fan or just a fan in general was locked into that game too. Like that game was awesome, going to overtime,
and the golden goal there was
right.
One that you dream about.
Just an unbelievable move to get to the center of the ice by Keller. It was great. So the entire, in terms of like you said, you mentioned, was it great for hockey? Absolutely it was across the board. And I feel like the people who are mad online, they're not like, they probably didn't even watch the games. You know, like they're mad about something that's like, it's sometimes it's just like you have to take a step back from the internet. And this might be one of those situations.
If your takeaway from the gold medal game between Canada and the United States is a political take or some sort of critiquing of their celebration yeah. habits, you're watching a different game yeah, than I am. And we're watching for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, they are enjoying themselves.
They looked like they had a great time at 11 down in Miami. So you were telling me that the planes got diverted because of the snow.
And yeah, that's just why they so ended everybody understands, like Finland, who got the bronze medal, Teuvo Teravainen from the Blackhawks, the only Blackhawk that was in the Olympic tournament. Everybody was supposed to fly through New York, including mm-hmm. Team Canada and Team USA. But with the weather predictions of the northeastern storm that was heading there, they weren't able to reroute the Finland team. So they get to New York and they were stuck there for yeah. 2 days. Teuvo got back to Chicago last night. Think about what the Americans have been doing since Teuvo Teravainen has been in New York.
He's stuck in LaGuardia, and Matthew Tkachuk's like, hey, boys, I know the spot to celebrate yeah. championships. So it was the scenes were incredible. It's also, you know, it is a collection of all-stars, more or less. And it feels like they've been playing together for forever. There's like a genuine camaraderie there that you would think would be very difficult to do 2 weeks every so often.
And credit the U.S. development program
for that. Great call.
Because these guys have been playing yeah. together since they were 14, 15, mm-hmm. 16. Whether it was
AAA. U18s. Yeah.
And I do think that helps bring a team together in a quicker fashion. And I think... And Kyle Davidson, we'll have a conversation mm-hmm. about him and the topics that you covered with the Blackhawks GM coming up a little later on. I think he realizes the importance of that. So the off-ice prospects camp yeah. that they've had the last 2 or 3 years has not been on ice.
Correct.
It's been all off-ice, and it's all about brotherhood building, mm-hmm. team building, and... So when these guys get called up from Rockford or come from their collegiate team or whatever, they're not a total fish out of water.
Correct,
they've gone to a Cubs game with yep. Bedard. They know what Nazar's and I do think there's something to that.
I think you're right. And it's like I used to love just popping into the prospects like when they have the scrimmage on the last day, but it's like whatever. You know, it may be more valuable to have these guys train together, like off-ice training and do like the little, I feel like I've seen them do like cooking competitions
yeah.
and like fun things like that where you get to see each other's personality and form like a genuine relationship. It's not all necessarily about competition on the ice because they are effectively, especially at that stage, competing for eyeballs from scouts and coaches and roster spots and all sorts of things like that. So it's they've done, I think that's been a good step that Davidson has done.
All right. A little bit more on the gold medal game. What kind of impact can this have? There's a tweet from 2011.
Craig Custance.
We'll get into that on the other side that really, I think, taps into just how important and impactful some of these players like Patrick Kane was and how he impacted, you know, the Tkachuks
yeah.
and the Hughes brothers. Mm-hmm. And his fingerprints are all over that gold medal. So that's coming up next. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show, Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans. Listen on the ESPN Chicago app from anywhere.
The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
The outlet pass for Keller, a defenseman. Nice move. Cuts to the net. Score! Megan Keller, the overtime hero. United States, it's gold and blood.
Megan Keller wins gold for Team USA as the women's take down Canada. I saw driving in on the Kennedy. They had the miracle on twice.
Oh, like that. Yeah, that's nice.
I think it...
We own the sport now. America owns
basically,
hockey.
Basically, I think that's what we're saying. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the impact with the Barstool Chief. I'm Pat Boyle. We're talking about the impact that, you know, what will this have on the future generation of hockey? Just like the 1980 team had an impact on the game, probably the Roenicks and Amontes and those guys.
And I think 96 had a big impact on guys like my age, where it's Ryan Kessler and like that, Eric Johnson, like that whole generation. People my age remember that as like, because that was a best of three final, and there was like Keith Tkachuk got in a big fight, like Claude Lemieux. That is maybe like the most underrated hockey tournament ever.
Right. And then 2010 in Vancouver goes to a gold medal game between U.S. and Canada. Yep. And Sidney Crosby gets the golden goal in that one. Patrick Kane played fantastic. Obviously, mm-hmm. later on that summer, the Hawks would hoist the cup.
Yeah.
And we've talked about, we're huge Kane fans. And we've talked about, you know, almost to a player right now in the National Hockey League, I would say 60-70% pick Kane as their most influential or favorite player growing up, including the Hughes brothers, even if it was Quinn playing defense.
Yeah.
The Tkachuk brothers, you see it, and we saw Edzo point it out, you know, with when they're showing the tight shot of Brady and Matthew on the bench, how they're gnawing on their mouth guard, and it looked just like Patrick mm-hmm. Kane. Yeah. But there was a tweet that Craig Custance put out.
Yeah, so it was a retweet. So he said, you know, USA Hockey announced, this is January 24th, 2011. USA Hockey 8-and-under membership has reached 100,000 participants for the first time ever. And Craig Custance retweets it. Look out 2026 Olympics. bingo. What was the future on that back then? So, yeah, he nailed it. And it is like, I've seen people projecting the rosters for the 2030. You know, like you always see like the
right. Rosters.
It's largely the same group. Like Eichel, Matthews, like all those guys will be like between 28 and 33, like the core of this team. And it's just like that group was these kids, and they all grew up on Patrick Kane. And it's like he is an American, but he's obviously a way different player than the Tkachuks. But it's like they look at the guy who's the most clutch, has the swagger, like he has a certain like cowboy American bravado about him that there wasn't really a guy like that when I was growing up. Maybe like Sergei Fedorov had a little bit of like of that weight to him, where he had like the Nike white skates and he was cool. But like Kane, like, yeah, he's awesome and he won, but he was just cool and people wanted to be like Patrick Kane. And then the other part of that is you look at just like the participation rates in and around Chicagoland after Taves and Kane, like that skyrocketed too. So it wouldn't surprise me if in maybe 2034 or something like that, you have a group of like five or six kids that are born and raised in Chicago playing, you know, TI or Mission or something like that, that grew up and started playing hockey because of those Blackhawks era teams. So his impact on USA Hockey is immense. They should give him the Presidential Medal of Freedom and maybe give him an honorary gold medal, because without his impact, I don't know how much this even happens.
All right, we talked a lot about Connor Hellebuck and mm-hmm. the amazing performance he turned in. All right, a lot of people are making a lot about the format, the 3-on-3. I was unaware that it was going to be 3-on-3 in the mm-hmm. gold medal game until a couple of days before. I would have liked to have seen 4-on-4 or 5-on-5. And it was to the Hawks, to the Team USA's benefit to go to that, because 5-on-5, the ice was tilted heavily in Canada's favor. Going forward, I think things will be tweaked.
Mm-hmm.
I heard Edzo have an idea of going with 5-on-5 hockey for X number of minutes, like 10 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
And then maybe you switch to 4-on-4 for
another
6, and then you finish the last 4 minutes of the period 3-on-3.
And then what?
And then you would resurface the ice, and I don't know.
Do it all over again.
Do a shootout. Yeah. No, you're not going to ever end in a shootout.
Look, the 3-on-3 is exciting.
And it is.
And it's like you're guaranteed a winner at some point.
And it produces a better golden goal.
No doubt.
I mean, taking nothing away from some of the Stanley Cup championships that we've witnessed in this city. But, like, look at what advanced L.A. to the Stanley Cup final.
Off Nick Leddy.
Nick Leddy's backside.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. Not exactly something you're going to gather the kids around.
If the IOC called me up, I would say just give me NHL rules across the board, and let's just play 5-on-5 forever if that's what it takes. Like, I don't care if it's quadruple overtime. Like, that's the way it should be decided. I do, like, it's exciting, but it is a gimmick. It's great for the regular season. It could be great for the preliminary rounds of the Olympics, but when it's a championship of that magnitude, I want it settled with, like, the purest form.
Yeah, they would probably have to play that gold medal game on Saturday night then, because if you start the game when they did and it goes two extra.
I think that's fine anyways.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go into the closing ceremonies.
Yes. Did anyone watch the closing ceremonies?
No,
who cares? That's one of those things where it's like,
you know, that's,
yeah, I understand. But yeah, I would much rather have had that game start at 2:00 in the afternoon than 7 in the morning.
For sure.
So I'm fine with that too.
NBC would have liked that as well.
I bet you they
would.
By the
way, their coverage was great. Hockey coverage was you know, Tirico.
Yeah.
Guy can do anything and everything.
Kenny Albert's very good.
Kenny had, next to Hellebuck, he had the best tournament.
Yeah, he was spectacular.
And think of how many games he's calling.
I think there was one day he did like three games. Games in a day.
And he's on top of everybody's name. Yep. And
some difficult names.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That aren't necessarily in the NHL a lot of the time. So.
The Johnny Gaudreau being honored after the game.
That was a tearjerker.
Unbelievable way to kind of put a bow on that thing, because it was, it's something that Team USA has kept in mind. We talk about the brotherhood and he's been a part of it, even since his passing. They called his parents in Jersey to come to Milan on Tuesday before the semifinals, and the first reaction from the Gaudreau family was to not come. And I guess after a sleepless night, the mom reconsidered and said Johnny would want us there, and so they pivoted and went. And then to look at, you know, Johnny's two kids and Johnny Jr., his second birthday on that day.
It was quite the moment, but it breaks your heart. Like those kids are so young. But it was a great moment and a great gesture. Like you said, it is about that brotherhood, that USA Hockey thing. And he earned that nickname, Johnny Hockey. He definitely would have been on this team. And so it was a nice thing for them to do.
And the Hughes brothers, Quinn Hughes, it's Cale Makar, Quinn Hughes as 1A and 1B as the two best defensemen on the planet. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Zach Werenski is in the next tier. He's leading off for me in the next tier. At times, I thought he was one interchangeable with the top two.
But I mean, you look at the play he made on the game-winning goal, where he's down deep and, you know, bodies McKinnon off and finds Jack Hughes. Like, he's a spectacular player who plays in a market where he probably doesn't get the attention he deserves.
How about Jack losing the chiclet?
Yeah.
And like looking like Bobby Clark out of the 70s.
Yeah.
And finishing it off after, you know, he hasn't had the easiest start to his career.
No.
First overall pick. But several injuries, and then the freak injury here in Chicago where he cuts his hand and misses a couple of months of action, only to get a game or two before the Olympics. And then the way that he and his brother and the Hughes family in general handled all the post-game comments.
Oh, it was perfect.
Talking about the troops and everything else and the brotherhood.
So proud to be American.
Oh, my. Yeah. I was like, you know.
Love this country. And it was like a message script that we all kind of, like, you need to hear sometimes. So, like, I don't know. They did everything great, and then, you know, and he lost the tooth, drew a 4-minute penalty, then he takes the penalty, and it's like, oh no, yeah. Like, because it negated the end, it gave them a power play towards you know, the final minute there, and then for him to come back out in the 3-on-3 and absolutely bury a golden opportunity, it was amazing.
All right, coming up, you sat down with Kyle Davidson, the general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks. I'll get your takeaways from that conversation, and a little bit later on, the top storylines that we're looking at, the final 7 weeks for the Blackhawks in their regular season. That's next. It's The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Spring training baseball.
Join us for White Sox and Rangers Friday at 2 on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show. When you're at home, don't miss Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Chevy Drive Chicago with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. We're coming from the brand new digs at the Chicago Board of Trade. This place is incredible. If there was any question whether or not the partying for Team USA had its impact and whether or not the guys would answer the bell on this night, Jack Hughes is in the lineup for the New Jersey Devils.
He sure is.
3 minutes of ice time thus far. And I will say they're going to be kind of staggering out of the gates a little bit here. They looked on an Ovechkin-like yeah. run. He had 3 months over the summer to do it. They packed it in about 48 hours.
Yeah, I saw the clip of Boldy at 11, pulled the jersey over his face and was drinking the champagne through his jersey. So, yeah, the boys looked like they had a good time down there.
Yeah, and I had no problem with it.
Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah.
You know what?
You like, should.
Go nuts.
How often does something like that happen?
Every 46 years.
Exactly, like yeah. That.
Hopefully a little bit more often.
Well, it's our sport now.
It's ours. When will we claim curling? That's the next question. You sat down with Kyle Davidson mm-hmm. this week. We're going to see it, I think, next week on the stretch, right?
Yep. It'll be Monday.
Okay. It'll drop on Monday. Give me some of the takeaways you had with Kyle from Chicago.
I think the biggest takeaway, because the interview, look, given the time of year, I know he's not. I didn't even ask him about Mikheyev or Murphy or anything. Like, you're not going to get a real answer out of that. So the interview, which lasted about an hour, became more about him and philosophies and things like that. Number one, I find him extremely likable.
Oh.
It's just like he's, I wouldn't say necessarily charming, but he comes off as like humble and honest and very thoughtful. It's like you have the right type of thinker at the helm of this thing, that he's not going to overreact. It's like the old kind of sports expression, like he lets the game come to him. And it's like, you know, because
I walk away saying that makes sense.
Totally.
More times than almost all the time, you're like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
And in this town, we haven't always been able to say that with general managers.
Absolutely. Almost never. Okay, so hence, we never win really anything except for that Blackhawks run or Michael Jordan. And so, no, like he's very thoughtful, very likable. We talked about, you know, what he wants to see for the rest of the year. I asked about Connor Bedard and his contract, and sounds like there's no real progress. I thought maybe there'd be something over the Olympic break, but doesn't sound like there's anything there. But still, like, you know, very confident it'll be done in the summer, and there's no rush. So it'll be very interesting to see what that number comes in at, because obviously he had a spectacular start to the year where it's like, does he get the Kaprizov $17 million? It's, you could justify it now. And then, you know, he just talks about like how much they're focusing on development, and we talked about Jeff Blashill a lot, about how he feels really good about that hire and the way that he's been able to connect with these guys and coach them hard. And it is just, you know, it didn't feel like it's necessarily like a waiting game in terms of like roster construction, that he, you know, looking at this draft, and I asked him about the previous drafts, because when he got there, it was all speed, all skill, very small, you know, smaller forwards especially. And I'm like, was drafting some of these guys Nastrasil 6'6", Mason West 6'5", Vaneker, bigger power forward, Spellacy. And I'm like, is that intentional? Is that like, are you trying to build out a roster? He's like, look, yes, like the board did fall that way. But yeah, that is something that we're kind of looking to address, where it's like, you know, you have to win, be able to win in multiple ways. And we know how you have to win in the playoffs. You can't just, you know, basically like a wink and a nod. That is, at some point it's going to have to be big boy hockey. And we didn't have a lot of those in the pipeline, and now they do. So that was, you know, it's not just accumulating assets for assets' sake. He has like a genuine plan of how this thing should look and feel when it's go time.
Did the Seth Jones trade come up at all, and the yes. first round pick?
Yeah, so we talked about that, and it was, you know, I didn't really care so much about the conditions, but it's like, you know, you might have one, you might have two. He's like, yeah, you know, we'll see. But it was like an interesting insight about how, and this is where he comes off as genuine. He goes, look, he's like, when guys leave here, or you, or at the draft, and you pass on somebody, it's not like you're rooting for the guy you passed on to play poorly so you look smart. You want, you know, like you get to know these guys through interviews and scouting, and you know, usually they have through themselves directly or through the scouts, like relationships that go back years. So it's like you want everybody to do well. And the Seth Jones trade, he's like, that kind of that was like the perfect trade, where they got a really good player, a guy who could have been on USA Hockey if he wasn't hurt, and we got a franchise goalie and another asset on top of that. And it's like they were in a cap situation where they had a backup goalie making $4 million. So it was like, it was perfect for us and perfect for them. And he's like, that really should be the goal with every trade. He's like, that's right. How I would want to approach every trade. So, and then, you know, we talked about just other roster construction. And I asked, because they do have theoretically two picks in this coming draft in the first round, three number twos. They've had a ton of picks. I'm like, you get worried about how do you even develop these guys? He goes, well, they have to develop. And he's like, you know, if it comes to a point where we have assets that are attractive, maybe we do bundle them or something, you know, like, but it's like nothing, it's not something we're pursuing because it's still early days. But it was like, you know, he's aware of, you know, how many guys he has and that they're doing kind of a good job. Like these guys are looking like
at every level they're at, they seem to be many of them performing at the highest level.
Correct. In their group. Yeah.
Yeah. So that brings me to the question that pretty much I get daily from Blackhawks fans. So are we going to go after, when are we going to start going after, you know, free agents and mm-hmm. and veterans to add to the mix? I think the answer is you got to see what you have in the pipeline first and give them the opportunity to show whether or not they're NHL worthy or top six worthy, bottom six, whatever the case may be. Did you get into the next step of the rebuild, so to speak?
We did. We talked about, you know, because I've said on this show many times, I didn't say it on that show because I didn't want to get a tampering situation for Kyle, but like Brady Tkachuk, and it's like, what, you know, what's the type of profile of player that you're looking for? He's like, you know, we're not going to go out and sign a 34-year-old guy who doesn't necessarily fit our timeline. He's like, unless it makes a lot of sense.
Jake Guentzel made sense. That's right, why they went after.
That made sense. So it's like, you know, we want a guy who's going to be here for a long time and help us win through this run. He's like, that's the goal. So he's like, you know, the superstar guys, they just don't really become available. And like this, the Quinn Hughes trade to Minnesota, that's a very rare situation. The guys just seem to, and then Mitch Marner too, like that was a unique situation where he left for Vegas after what was going on in Toronto. So it was just like, you know, I think they're ready to pounce if the right opportunity comes, but they're not necessarily fishing for, you know, the next big veteran piece. It's just like if that situation presents itself because they have enough assets and that particular player makes sense, then they'll make a deal. And it's like you kind of saw that play out with the Spencer Knight trade.
Obviously, he's not going to divulge anything when it comes to the draft, but there's been some talk, at least prior to a couple of weeks ago, that the Hawks were not interested in Gavin McKenna. And then I think Ben Pope wrote a couple of times this week that now there is interest in Gavin McKenna, or there mm-hmm. he'd be on their radar. I don't know whose radar he wouldn't be on. Yeah. Did just your thoughts? Like he puts up 8 points in a game last week, and I know there's some off the ice stuff. To me, if you look into that,
I almost
agree.
Like it. Stock up.
I am 100% behind you on that.
Yeah. So I think there were some people when that story broke, given the Blackhawks history, they're like, oh, they're going to write him off. But I don't think that was ever really the case. So I think he's probably on their board, but I think they're open and they just don't know where they're going to pick. You know, like the team started off so hot. And I think at this moment, if there were no lottery, they'd be picking like sixth or seventh. And that probably takes you out of the Gavin McKenna territory. But if you have a bad rest of the year, you might, you know, be in that top three mix where he's going to go. But yeah, I mean, he looks like a fantastic player who needed to adjust to living away in the United States and being a college kid and playing against bigger, stronger guys that in the NCAA level, as opposed to playing against 16, 17, 18-year-olds in the Western League. So it was an adjustment. It feels like really kind of since maybe that the assault charge is he's really kind of kicked into
gear.
Did you
see the Conor McGregor celly he did?
No, yeah. That's awesome. Oh, yeah.
He's leaned
that.
Into it. He's yeah, leaned into it.
You're dialed into Penn State probably more than
yeah,
I am.
I am.
And so, yeah, I did see that, but I love that. And, yeah, like he's an obvious talent. So, yeah, if he's available when the Hawks are picking, I would highly, you know, recommend taking him. But there's, you know, I think they're open to everything. And Kyle said on the show that he flew in from Fargo. So he's up there looking at North Dakota. They got a defenseman who's projected in the top three. So maybe it's a defenseman. Maybe it's, you know, one of these BU kids. I'm sure he'll, you know, was at the Bean Pot and stuff like that. So, you know, there's Tynan Lawrence and there's a Malhotra, like the two BU centers. Who are both?
Is he related to Manny Malhotra?
I believe so. Okay. I don't know if that how common of a name that is, but I always just assumed that was like his son.
Nepotism is alive and well in hockey, so yes. I would probably lean into that.
Yeah.
So the Blackhawks, they begin the final 25 games of the regular season tomorrow night in Nashville. They've got 53 points. They're 10 points out of the second wild card spot in the Western Conference. Let's get to the phone lines. We're going to start talking about kind of the storylines that Chief and I are keeping an eye on here, the final 25 games as we finish up Connor Bedard's third season in the National Hockey League. Let's go to our buddy Tom in New Jersey. Welcome to the Hockey Show. Are you there, Tom?
I'm here, and I'm honored to take be the first caller in the new Jeff Dickerson studio. And appropriate that Jack Hughes, the New Jersey Devil, scored the golden goal. So you touched upon a lot of the points that I was going to make, the toughness, losing the teeth, coming back, scoring the goal, the Johnny Gaudreau tribute. They actually had one at the site of the accident where he and his brother were killed. I thought John Cooper was a little bit of a crybaby, complaining about the 3-on-3. He knew that going in. But in terms of going forward with the Hawks, Teuvo Teravainen was the only guy who represented us playing for Finland. Bedard was awfully close. Maybe without the injury, he would have made Team Canada. Where do you see other potential Hawks that might have a chance to represent Team USA in 4 years? And where do we go from here in terms of trade deadline? Are we selling again? And what do you see for the last 25?
All right, Tom, thanks for the call. We'll jump on those questions. First of all, I think Spencer Knight is going to be one of the three goalies that plays in France in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Nazar, we'll see how things, you know, play out. These guys are early on in their career. Connor Bedard's going to be with Team Canada going forward.
100%.
And maybe they're wishing he was with them in Milan last week.
One goal short.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
relying on one line, basically.
Basically, yeah. I mean, Celebrini's playing 25 minutes a night, which is insane. But as far as the you know, Blackhawks who could play for Team USA specifically, you know, it's a lot of development has to happen, but I wouldn't rule out Sam Rinzell in 4 years if, you know, he turns into what we think he can. If you're trying to build a team, I could see an Alex Vlasic being in a shutdown role. And then, you know, we'll see what, you know, happens with guys like Oliver Moore. If he turns into like an elite penalty killer, could he kind of slot into that, you know, Vincent Trocheck, JT Miller role? Cause those guys would have probably aged out. So there's possibilities, but it's a ways away, but the cupboard is pretty full, and it wouldn't surprise me if we saw Anton Frondell playing for Sweden in 4 years. So, there's a lot of talent in this pipeline, but it's so far away. Like I'm sure looking at 2022, no one had Macklin Celebrini on their list for this team back then, and you look at him now. So, yeah, we'll see. It's a long way to go, but, you know, there's certainly a few guys that will be invited to camps and stuff for sure.
All right, some of the storylines that we are looking at here, the final 7 weeks of the regular season. You mentioned Anton Frondell. That was probably the number one thing in my mind as we see this season transpire. He's going to be like the trade deadline acquisition for the Blackhawks. I don't expect them. They're going to be sellers, mm-hmm. to answer Tom's question. In all likelihood, you will see Connor Murphy moved. You could see Jason Dickinson move.
Possibly Mikheyev.
Mikheyev. I think, you know, I guess they could re-sign him, but I would like to hold on to Mikheyev.
Yeah, we'll see.
But we'll see. You know, he's one of the best penalty killers in the National Hockey League, if not the. So we'll see on that front. But I want to see Anton Frondell when the Swedish league is his season is over, and they're not expected to go very far. I think they're seventh or eighth right now in their division. And it's a best of three, mm-hmm. the first round. So
I will be rooting against Djurgårdens IF. Okay. That will be rooting against Djurgårdens, if that's how you pronounce that.
You'll be at the barn watching that game with your
2 o'clock games or whatever it is. So, that is, and we saw that last year. It made the end of the year fun when, you know, the playoff race was obviously decided, but you got this injection of Nazar had been there. But you had Rinzel coming up, and you had, you know, a bunch of the young guys playing. It just made it more interesting, made it more fun. You could start to see, like, kind of the fruits of the hockey ops labor coming to bear. And I think getting another wave of that, you know, and you could see, you know, you might see Sasha Boisvert turn pro from BU. Like, you could see a different guys that maybe we're not all thinking about at least get some games at the end of the year. And it just makes it more fun and more hopeful. So, yeah, and maybe Roman Kantsarev, too, coming over from Russia.
That one's going to be a little more difficult. First of all, his team looks to go further in the KHL playoffs. Yeah. And then there's some other red tape and signing things that he needs to go through before he can come stateside. But by all accounts, and that's the one thing about, you know, Russia not being a part of the international landscape the last few years. There's been a little question mark, you know, like we don't get to see him in the World Juniors. We don't get to see these players play for Russia in the Olympics. And so, you know, if you go by his numbers and compare him to Kirill Kaprizov, Kantsarev's numbers are better than Kirill's at a younger age.
He already has the record for most points by a U-23 player in the KHL.
Yeah.
So he will be here. I talked to Davidson about him too, and like you could just tell, like he's this guy's we got something with this guy. Like you know, like everything's a ways away. He's gonna have to develop. Who knows if he's ready right away or not? We'll see. But it's like whenever he comes over, it's like they have another dynamic forward to add to the mix, and maybe that impacts how they draft too. You just never know, because if he really is what they're thinking, you know, could be a special top six wing, and Frondell is in that mix as well, then all of a sudden maybe you do look at a defenseman, or maybe you do look at a guy who's more of like a pure center as opposed to a Gavin McKenna who's on a wing. So there's a lot to be sorted out here, plenty of storylines that are interesting to me at least.
All right, we'll dive into what we expect to see from Connor Bedard here the last 7 weeks. Your calls as well, 312-332-3776. It's a Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to the Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app, 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show.
Pat Boyle hosts Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans.
The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Back on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, brought to you by your Chicagoland Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, Chevy Drive Chicago. Barstool Chief Pat Boyle, thanks to our producer Aiden O'Connor, doing a great job in our new studios at the Chicago Board of Trade. Let's go to the phone lines and let's bring in Elliot. Elliot from Elgin, how you doing tonight?
Very well. Thanks, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
What do you got for us?
Well, it looks like Korchinski is going to get a little bit of an extended look here. Hopefully he plays well. However, say hypothetically he looks completely lost at his own end and he's like a minus 25 in 20 games. Do you think that'll be pretty much it for him, or do you think they'll bring him back and, you know, give him an extended look again next year? Thank you.
All right, Elliot, thank you for the call. The one thing that stands out to me, Chief, as I've watched him here, they had six workouts before the start of the post-Olympic break. He hasn't gotten bigger over his since he's been drafted, and he's got to fill out that frame a little bit if he wants to be able to perform in the National Hockey League. That's just one area that jumps out. Look, it usually takes longer for defensemen, but we also know that this is the most deep part of the Blackhawks roster organizationally. So
totally,
you know, if he continues down the path where it doesn't look like he's the right fit now, you know, he might be moving a guy to greener pastures for a new reboot and a restart for him.
Yeah, I think the things that he was drafted for, he still probably does very well. The skating, the offensive ability, it's the other side of the game. It feels like, by all reports, is just not quite there. And you're right, like the emergence of people like Wyatt Kaiser and Louis Crevier, where they look like bona fide NHL guys. Kaiser's going to be a top four guy. Crevier is going to be in the mix. So it was already deep, and now it suddenly looks a little bit deeper. So he just might have to be on the outside looking in, unfortunately, for him.
Connor Bedard returns to the full duties of a centerman. He'll be taking faceoffs. He's going to be split up with Frank Nazar. I'm looking for a strong 25 from him. I'm looking for pre-injured Connor Bedard, where he was among the league leaders. I'm looking for 30 to 36 points him to finish.
I want that last 25.
I think you're going to get that. Yeah. I don't think he's going to say it, but I think he's going to be motivated because of the Team Canada snub.
I think so, too. And I kind of want that from the whole team. Like, Frank Nazar looked different before his injury. And I think the break kind of came at a perfect time for the Hawks, where you had a lot of young guys who have never played this many games, three games, you know, in a week, the travel, the whole thing. So everybody, you know, get out to Cabo for a week, relax, and then they kind of get to have a little mini training camp here with Blashill drilling home the systems, and I think we could see a strong finish for this group, and then you just get ready to go for next year.
Hawks back in action tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, as they take on the Nashville Predators. That's going to do it for this edition of the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We will see you next Wednesday.